Welcome, I'm Rose Aguilar, and this is Your Call. In 2013, in response to multiple violent deaths of young Latinos in San Francisco's Mission District, hundreds of residents came together to figure out how to stop the violence. The result was a new community initiative called the Roadmap to Peace. It's dedicated to transforming the health and safety outcomes of the most disconnected Latino youth ages 13 to 24. Roadmap to Peace provides direct services for Latino youth in San Francisco and works to promote city policies around juvenile justice, budgeting, and police tactics. Roadmap to Peace is one of the winners of this year's Community Board's San Francisco Peacemaker Awards. And today we are joined in studio by Angela Gallegos Castillo, community builder and planner for Roadmap to Peace. Angela has 25 years of experience working in social justice efforts and with low income and communities of color. She has been with Roadmap to Peace since 2015, and she joins us in studio. Hi, Angela. Thank you so much for coming in.
Thank you for the invitation.
We're also joined by Alberto. Alberto has been in Roadmap to Peace for a year and a half. He just finished his freshman year in high school, and he lives in the Mission District, and he's 14 years old. Hi, Alberto. Thank you for coming in.
Thank you.
And we're joined by Felipe Hernandez. Felipe is Alberto's care manager. He's been with Roadmap to Peace for 2 years. He does a lot of work with youth in the prison system. He's also an artist and a musician. And Felipe joins us in studio. Hi, Felipe. Thank you for coming in.
Hi, good morning. Thank you for having us.
Good morning. Thank you all so much for coming in, and congratulations on this award. Angela, I want to start with you. Take us back to that day in 2013 when Roadmap to Peace was created. About 500 community members got together to talk about the violent deaths of young Latinos in San Francisco's Mission District.
Thank you. Yes, back in 2012, at the end of the summer, early fall, six young Latino men were murdered, died on the streets of San Francisco, and the community called a time of action. People were tired of raising funds for more funerals and really asking and calling out to the leadership in San Francisco, both government officials as well as our community leaders, asking the nonprofits working with youth to really address the issue of youth violence from a new and not business as usual way. So there were marches and vigils, mothers, fathers, businesses, faith-based leaders, people coming together and having a dialogue and discussion about what are we not yet doing and how are we not helping young people create alternatives to violence. And so the community organized. They had committees. They discussed. There was a lot of community wealth and knowledge that came to the fore that created the vision of Roadmap to Peace. The organizing and community dialogues happened and for about a year. And on November 1st, 2013, the vision of Roadmap to Peace as an initiative, not just a program, but as an initiative, was presented to city officials as well as to community leaders and community members.
Over the past couple of years, there have been police killings of Latino youth, but you're specifically right now, and we'll talk about that later, mm-hmm. but you're talking about youth on youth violence.
We're talking about youth vulnerable to violence, involved in street activity, being at risk and vulnerable to gang recruitment, because we know that unfortunately, so much has changed in our social network, in our communities. The alternatives to violence have dwindled and have been decreasing. The number of programs have decreased so much from the time I was a high school student and a young adult. There were so many programs available during the summer. And while there are programs now, Roadmap to Peace addressed and approached the youth violence issue by saying, you know, we may have resources in the city, and we are a very resource-rich city. We need to do it differently in a way that the adults are talking to each other, that are holding the lives of young people, that are vulnerable to risk and already in risk. So those that are already involved with street activity and gang activity. So one of our strategies for Roadmap to Peace was the creation of a new service network that was specifically developed to work with Latino youth, where seven agencies, Latino-serving agencies, came together to say, we're going to create a network that's collaborative and that the adults in the network from the different agencies are holding the lives and having conversations with young people about what's going on so we don't lose them through the cracks.
Can you elaborate on what you just said about the number of social programs that were available when you were younger versus what's available now for young people like Alberto?
So when I was growing up in Redwood City, California, everything from MESA, mathematics, engineering, science achievement, Upward Bound provided summer programs on college campuses that brought youth, high school youth, to have a college experience. YEP, that still exists. So it's the number as well as the amount of funding that goes into these programs. And also, I just read an article about how our country has really shifted from providing resources to low-income families to making low-income families the target of negative and just, classist kind of critiques. And so I think we've moved away from looking at a war on poverty and now looking at war on poor families for lack of support.
Alberto, what goes through your mind when you hear Angela say that there were more programs available when she was young versus programs available for you and your friends?
I feel like there is a lot of programs nowadays, but like not like back in her days. Like, I do feel like a lot of youth sometimes don't take advantage of like these programs.
What is available for you? I mean, what's available in your school? What's available in your community? You live in the Mission.
What's available for me? I go to Chalk. I go to Chalk and Caliquin to do job trainings, mm-hmm. and they pay me for. And yeah, I like to take advantage of that. And also like to, the Roadmap to Peace, I like to kick it with my counselor, Felipe.
How did you find out about Roadmap to Peace?
My other counselor, Jamie, she referred me to Felipe.
And Felipe, why don't you talk a little bit about what is available or is not available for, especially for at-risk youth?
Yeah, and it goes back to learning the history here in California. Mm-hmm. Going to school myself in Los Angeles, my school was militarized, where we had, metal detectors that we had to go through. And this was in the mid-90s, so there was a lot of changes in the laws that were attacking us. A lot of the home ec, auto mechanic shops, programs were taken out of the school system. And, we started seeing a lot of the new laws like Super Predator come out. So a lot of my generation were filtered directly into the juvenile hall system or the CYAs. But it has transformed in the last years. A lot of folks that were sentenced as minors in the mid-90s to the 2000s are now seeing they're returning back to court. The direct file law has been changed. So it has changed a lot. The opportunities are starting to come back right now. With regards to the RTP program, there's many other programs that the state's trying to help our communities. But it has changed dramatically.
What message does that send to youth?
That there's hope. Because I know when we were growing up, there wasn't no hope. We were getting arrested. We were out on the streets. The job opportunities were not there. We were really getting railroaded to the prison system with no opportunities. And with the Roadmap to Peace and other programs, there is hope. For us to go and look for some of these youth that are getting lost in the streets, and that they end up in the prison system.
Mm-hmm. I think our tagline is connections, healing, and transformation. And so much like Jose Alberto said, there may be the programs within certain nonprofits or the city, but if youth don't know that they exist mm-hmm. or there is no linkage, it's hard for them to get to, right? Or if families are not connected and we have a service network, for example, that they work with, they don't know the information in order to access, right? So one issue is access, having families and caregivers understand that they have access to certain programs. Because we know that young people, I mean, you started off saying that young people are seen as predators and criminals, and we do a lot of that with our kids of color, mm-hmm. right? Our youth of color, right. Especially brown and black boys. And so how would we feel if we were constantly being seen as criminals and not as a resource in our community and not worth the investment to develop leadership? And so Roadmap to Peace is about developing leadership, not just about helping young people get back on track with a job, with removing tattoos, with immigration services, and getting back into the classroom with a job. But it's also about, you know, what is their passion? When was the last time we asked a young person, what is your passion? What do you want to be when you grow up? And I was surrounded with a lot of adults that asked me that. I don't know that we have that many poor youth of color, women and men. And so I think the linkages, the access, and seeing youth as resources, right, and their creativity as solution makers. And so investing in that youth leadership is very important. And our Department of Children, Youth, and Families is very forward-thinking in that regard because they are investing funding in youth leadership. And we have a group within Roadmap to Peace called Youth Warriors. And they are being trained to not only be youth leaders, but also facilitators and evaluators. Roadmap to Peace is fairly new, and we're building our traction. And we're very pleased at the amount of progress that we see in youth's lives, especially those that are justice involved. We work with young adults that are coming out of the jail and through the alternative sentencing planning program, alternative sentencing program through the DA's office, we're working with young people so as not for them to get more involved into the criminal justice system.
Mm-hmm. Alberto, you are 14. You just finished your freshman year in high school. What is your passion? What do you like to do? What gets you excited?
I like to skateboard. Always keeps me away from trouble, or it always takes away my time. And I like to skateboard. I like to read. Yeah, I also like to read at the house.
What are you reading?
The Lone Ranger and Tonto Fist Fight in Heaven.
And what do you think about what Angela said, that young people these days, a lot of at-risk youth, for example, are not asked these questions? What is your passion? What do you want to be when you grow up? What do you dream about, for example? Mm. Is this what you do? You talk about this in school?
I don't really talk about it, in school. I might talk about it like towards my counselor Felipe, and what I would like to do would learn mechanics. And work with my uncle, because he owns a garage in Fremont, and he also has a towing company.
We're at such a interesting time right now, especially in San Francisco. There's so much wealth in the city, so much poverty, mm-hmm. and it's hard enough for someone who makes a decent salary to keep their apartment if they're renting. And I feel like the conversation is so focused on the people kind of just hanging on in the middle, and we're not talking as much about at-risk youth or people who are living in poverty. Mm-hmm. And what do you think people need to know about what at-risk youth are dealing with today?
Well, there's a lot of stuff and so many levels of it. You know, we have kids that are coming into the city with no guidance, no parents, no family. And so they have to figure out how we're going to maintain ourselves, how we're going to live here in this expensive city. So there's been times where we find youth that are sleeping in cars or sleeping in parks, and it's our job to get them out. And so, you know, understanding what's going on, also understanding why they're selling drugs, why they're getting involved with negative street activity. Mm-hmm. There's so much displacement in the city that some, you know, we were forced into doing things like this.
Mm-hmm. We have families that are 2-3 families in one apartment. There's food scarcity, really lacking the funds to ensure that they're eating every day. And I think with the gentrification happening, and we all know that the Mission District has historically held the Latino community, people are being displaced into outside to other cities on the East Bay or in the region, as well as into other districts. We've always been in every single district, but we see more of a concentration of Latinos moving into Excelsior, the Tenderloin, lots of children and families moving, hearing stories of folks moving to Richmond and having to get up at 4 or 5 in the morning every day, getting to the city to get to school, to work, leaving at 8 at night after everyone's done, and then having to do it all over again the next day. So there is a lot of challenges that people are carrying. And with Roadmap to Peace, we always remind ourselves that people also bring gifts. There are burdens and gifts, and there are people are resilient. Latino families are resilient, very resourceful. And so there are other two strategies for Roadmap to Peace are community building, so maintaining and creating activities and community events to help people maintain their roots and their relationships and connections to San Francisco. Both within RTP and the youth, we're having a youth summit on June 10th for our Roadmap to Peace participants. And our other strategy is policy advocacy. You asked about poverty. You asked about how do we help young people thrive. Well, part of the solutions are to remove those barriers that impede young people to thrive in the first place. So the school district of years in 2009 took out the disciplinary policy and approved of restorative justice principles for working with youth that have challenging behavior. We're looking at housing. Roadmap to Peace's members have been involved in the housing movement for creating more affordable housing for families. And identifying all those other policies that are needed to create an environment that is more welcoming and also more productive for young people. The criminal justice reform is a key one, because we know that policies have been the reason why Black and brown boys have been incarcerated at a higher rate than any other group.
So addressing the classification processes, direct filing for youth, to get that opportunity to come back home and change their lives instead of incarcerating them for the rest of their lives. Definitely seeing and changing some of the laws so some of these kids won't be pushed out of college opportunity, job opportunities. It's a number of things that we get pushed out.
Mm-hmm. Felipe Hernandez has been with Roadmap to Peace for 2 years. It's an organization that's dedicated to transforming the health and safety outcomes of the most disconnected Latino youth in San Francisco. We're also joined today by Angela Gallegos Castillo. She is community builder and planner for Roadmap to Peace. And Alberto has been with Roadmap to Peace for a year and a half. He just finished his freshman year in high school. He lives in the Mission and he's 14. And we'd love to hear from you. If you work with at-risk youth, especially in the Bay Area, what are you seeing right now? What kinds of policy changes would you like to see? What services are out there? What do we need more of? The toll-free number is 866-798-8255. 855-866-798-8255. If you live in the Mission and you'd like to ask our guests a question or talk about the changes that you've seen, especially with youth there, we'd love to hear from you. You can also email feedback@yourcallradio.org. Alberto, how long have you lived in the Mission?
I lived in the Mission for about my whole life.
Oh, your whole life?
Yeah.
Okay, so what do you think of all these? There are drastic changes happening in your neighborhood. What do you think of all of them?
I feel like there's a lot of violence between, like, youth and also, like, even just, like, the justice system. Yeah, I feel like, man, I don't know.
There's the housing costs there are very, very high. There's new condos being built. The businesses are really changing. I remember a lot of people wouldn't go to, say, 14th, 13th and Mission. There was, you know, now I'm not, I shouldn't say it like that. There were a lot of new yoga studios there now, things that did not exist 5 years ago. I mean, we're seeing major, major changes in your neighborhood. What do you and your friends say about all these changes?
I did actually see a change. I left to Los Angeles like a week ago, and like in that week when I came back to the city, I already saw this one family that got evicted on 24th and Harrison, and I saw that they used to live there, but when I got back, it was shut down.
They're gone.
Yeah, they're gone.
What do you and your friends say about all of these changes that you're seeing? That it's so hard for people who've lived there for a long time, generations, to stay there because of evictions and now the high cost of living.
Yeah, I feel like a lot of families have to, like, probably have to leave because of evictions and how it really affects them.
And then what about how it's changed for you, for youth who live in the Mission?
I don't really know how to answer that question.
Can I say, well, it's created a challenge because, you know, with the tech industry coming into San Francisco, into the Mission District, it brought some wealth that we weren't seeing here.
Right. Mm-hmm.
So you have kids that, you know, they're migrating here from El Salvador, Honduras, and they're seeing folks with a lot of money, you know, Palm Pilots,
like $800 iPads, phones on them, right?
Of course they're going to go ahead, and if they see somebody with that on their hand and they're struggling, of course it's going to happen. Also, to the violence that happens with these new neighbors coming into the community, too. There's a lot of struggle within the community with that.
How can we have a conversation about the violence, for example? Because what you read is, obviously, people are frightened and angry about it. But it doesn't really go very deep. There's not a conversation about why this is happening. There's all these conversations in these neighborhood community forums about violence that's taking place in various neighborhoods. But it stops there. A lot of people don't go to the next step to say, well, let's have a conversation about why this is happening in the first place.
I think we need to stop and take pause and realize that we need to start building bridges within the districts, with families, with our neighbors. I think there's been a lot of tension, especially in the Mission District, right, which is ground zero for gentrification and displacement. And you have new neighbors calling the police when a conversation could really just be had with getting to know who's on your porch or who's on the corner. And also with the police department, you know, there's they're stopping kids on the corner, but not stopping, you know, other white kids on the corner. So there's definite issues with this police department on profiling. And
And in the Mission, we've dealt with gang classification with a lot of our youth. And gang classification, when you're classified as a gang member, that kicks you out from any type of services, any type of programs. It's very difficult to get out of the gang classification. So our youth can be walking in threes, and they're considered a gang. If they're wearing a certain color, they're considered a gang. Tattoos, they're considered a gang. It could be cultural art to brother's name, a sister's name, but in the eyes of law enforcement, we're all connected. We're all gang members. So we deal with a lot of gang classification in our community.
And I think that we also need to address and define what community policing really means in a city like San Francisco, because I think that the police department may say that they're doing community policing, but where do we really see the beat cop walking around? The beat cop that used to know the names of the youth on the street and could know that, you know, that's Mario and that's his mom and he's going to go talk to his mom because he saw Mario, you know, with Fulano, Sutano. But it's having, you know, it's knowing, it's having the connections in community to be able to have conversations. And I think just Roadmap to Peace speaks of multiracial alliances. It speaks about the need for restorative practice and to create those conversations that are difficult but are definitely needed in order to get to know each other. I would invite everyone that's new to the mission or to San Francisco to say, hey, have you met your neighbor? Reached out and said, hi, I'm your new neighbor and I'd like to get to know you. Bring some cookies. Or just, you know, begin that dialogue and open up.
Sit in this drum circle.
Create the opportunities. I think back to the old saying, right? We are the solution, right? We all need to be 100% responsible for creating the community we want to see.
Well, if you live in the mission, we'd love to hear from you. What do you think about this conversation? Do you know your neighbor? If you're a new neighbor in the mission, or if you've been there for generations, if your family's been there for generations, we'd love to hear from you. Today, we're talking about Roadmap to Peace. It's an organization that's dedicated to transforming the health and safety outcomes of the most disconnected Latino youth in San Francisco, especially in the Mission District. And they are one of the winners of this year's Community Board San Francisco Peacemaker Awards. This is Your Call, and we'll be back after this.
This is Your Call on KALW, a show that relies on engaged listeners. You can join in today's conversation by calling us at 866-798-TALK. That's toll-free, 866-798-8255. And you can post a comment or question at yourcallradio.org or tweet us at yourcallradio. A moment to say thank you to Reese and Margaret Jones of Belvedere Tiburon and Ruth A. Felt of San Francisco for being members and supporters of KLW, keeping the local and the public in local public radio. Thank you.
This is Your Call. I'm Rose Aguilar. Coming up tomorrow, we will speak with another Peacemaker Award recipient. We'll have a conversation with Phoebe Vanderhorst, founder of WayPass, Women's Aftercare Program and Supportive Services. After incarceration and recovering from drug and alcohol addiction, Phoebe Vanderhorst created WayPass for other formerly incarcerated students at City College of San Francisco. Another amazing program. I hope you can join us for that. And today we're talking with another recipient, Roadmap to Peace. It's an organization dedicated to transforming the health and safety outcomes of the most disconnected and at-youth Latino youth in San Francisco in the Mission District. And today we're joined by Angela Gallegos Castillo, community builder and planner for Roadmap to Peace. She's been there since 2015. Felipe Hernandez has been with Roadmap to Peace for 2 years. He also does a lot of work with youth in the prison system. And Alberto is just 14. We're so glad you came on today, Alberto. He just finished his freshman year in high school. He lives in the Mission, and he's been with Roadmap to Peace for a year and a half. And if you'd like to join us, I think these conversations, especially now, are so, so important. At a time when it's so difficult for people making a good wage to make ends meet, a lot of people are being evicted. A lot of people are wondering if they're going to be next. And so I feel like we're just not spending as much time talking about at-risk youth, people who are poor, have, you know, on SSI. I mean, we do that on this show. We are dedicated to doing that. But in the larger conversation, we're not hearing much about that. And that's why these conversations are so important. So if you'd like to weigh in and talk about at-risk youth, if you have a question for Alberto, He's 14. He's on our panel today. If you work with at-risk youth, if you'd like to talk about the changes that you're seeing in San Francisco or anywhere really in the Bay Area and what you think about it and what we as a community need to do to make sure that these youth are not left behind, we'd love to hear from you. 866-798-8255. You can also email feedback@yourcallradio.org. And let's hear from William in Belvedere. Hi, William. Welcome to the show.
Yes, thank you. Thank you very much. You asked earlier in the show, well, what are the fundamental problems? And then there's been a whole discussion of what I would call the symptoms. I mean, somebody goes to college now, so that's the aspiration. So you go to college now, and then you get to serve coffee in the Starbucks. There are fundamental problems, but I think that what you're talking about are largely symptoms. And I'd like to suggest what a cause of the fundamental economic problem is, if I may.
Sure. May I? Sure, okay. Please.
There's a great automation taking place in society. The machinery that takes care of the automation is not owned by the workers. It's owned by the people who own the machinery, the employers. And the result of the machinery existing is that there's less employment in decent jobs. And so, but the profits then go to the people who own the machinery, not to the workers. So, I mean, it's I would just like to put that out. But I think that when someone deals with the symptoms, it's very important to deal with the symptoms. But at the same time, one can lose sight of what the fundamentals are. And I would like to know whether there is ideas on the part of the guests about what the fundamental economic problems are. I threw out one perspective, but I think that if you just look at the symptoms, you don't solve the problem.
Well, thank you, William. And to add to what you just said, there was an editorial in the New York Times yesterday about how this administration wants to drastically slash food stamps. Mm-hmm. The problem is that so many people are working. They don't have benefits. They can barely make ends meet, and so as a result, they're on food stamps. This piece also pointed out that when we hear about all of these jobs that are being created, you don't hear that about 8 out of every 10 jobs that are being created are very low-wage jobs with no benefits.
Right.
This is what we're dealing with.
Right. I also thank you to the caller. I mean, the economic shifts in this country have been drastic. We've gone from a manufacturing economy to a knowledge-based economy. And what does that mean to young people that don't finish high school, that don't get to college, but are very smart? And the opportunities have lessened for them to be able to get educated in coding, for example, or their schools don't have the programs in order for them to get educated in them. And so we have back to the upstream, right? How do we prevent this from happening is, you know, making sure that our educational system is adequately resourced and organized in a way that provides poor children in rural areas and in urban areas the type of education that will allow them to get those good jobs. Not just, you know, we need to build career pathways. And Roadmap to Peace, working with Bay Area Community Resources as one of the agencies, is not just looking at how do we get young people a job, but how do we get them onto a pathway that provides a career as opposed to a job down at the McDonald's. So I think the answer is multifaceted, right? One of the beauties of Roadmap to Peace is that we're looking at the young person holistically. We're not just looking at education. We're not just looking at medical care, but we're looking at everything. So the 7 partners, which I should name, Instituto Familiar de la Raza, offers mental health services. We know that a young person can have a job, but they need to keep that job. And if he is addressing issues of trauma because of his family experience or his own experience, we know that it's going to be more difficult for him to keep that job. Garesen, Central American Resource Center, offers immigration support, legal support, as well as tattoo removal and care management. Bay Area Community Resources is our partner for the career pathways and job development. We have Mission Neighborhood Health Center, who is ensuring that all the Roadmap to Peace youth have access to a medical home and that have the health services to be well enough to get to a job and to get to school. We have Mission Neighborhood Centers that's focused on rites of passage and fatherhood programs, anger management, and they're supporting youth in that way. And we also have Five Keys Charter School. They offer GEDs in the jails and in community. And so this combination of resources is our hope, and we're building it so that young people have access, easy access to all these support systems.
Are you also working with the schools? Are they getting involved in this?
We have...
Definitely. There's mostly all the high schools in the Mission District are working with us. They call us when they are referring a youth that they're finding that they're having challenges. They reach out to us, counselors, teachers. So we work really close with the teachers and the counselors and the schools.
I think it's important to also note that Roadmap to Peace works with the arts and culture, right? We're looking at ways to think out of the box and ensure that young people have access to cultural arts, because we know that there are, as Estela Garcia, the executive director of Instituto, says, there are many medicines, right, that will heal us. And many times it's through the arts that young people connect with another adult, and whether it be song, poetry, video making,
producing, DJing.
Right. We try to offer those kind of opportunities as well.
Alberto, what goes through your mind when you hear, you know, Felipe talking about how police deal with what they think are gang members? If you walk down the street with two friends, they might question you or say something to you. And then we're talking about how the economy in this country is changing and how difficult it is for people to find a job that actually pays a living wage. First off, what about on the gang comment? What do you think about that?
I feel like it's very likely if I'm walking down like the street with my friends or something, and police just happens to, like, you know, have nothing, like, has nothing else to do or nothing better to do but to stop us, see what's up.
Have you ever been stopped?
I was actually, the other week I was about to get stopped, actually, but Felipe actually once told me this. He told me when you are being stopped by police, you ask them if you're being detained or if you're free to go. So he let me go because, like, he knew that I knew how to handle the situation, because he just wanted to find something, like, to like, you know, to put on me or to get me in trouble for, like, even the smallest thing. And I feel like youth are very, like, vulnerable, like here in the Mission, like, if you're just with your friends or something, like, the police will, they will, like, very likely to stop you or just try and mess with you or something.
How does that affect just the way you go about your everyday life?
I try my best to watch over my back, right? That's why I'm always on my skateboard. So, I'm always on my skateboard.
And how did you feel? I mean, are you sharing this information that Felipe taught you about knowing your rights? Now that you do know your rights,
yeah,
how does that change your everyday interactions?
I feel more... A little more safe, right? Like, for myself, right? Because, like, I have some knowledge against, like, laws and everything.
Felipe, do you talk with youth regularly about knowing their
rights?
Yes,
we have to. We have to right now, because we're in a time where some of these kids are getting killed on the street. You know, the police department pulls you over and you try to reach for your ID as they're asking you to do that. And we've had folks get shot. Uh-huh. And so we have to educate the kids of how to handle situations. You know, we know that the police department has gone through a very difficult time. So it's up to us to educate our youth and our community as how to handle this. Not only the police department, but also immigration, ICE, when they come into the community. What it's created a community that's scared.
Hmm.
We don't want to talk to nobody. We don't want to go out and walk our community because we're in fear that we might get in trouble or get ourselves deported, you know.
We just learned last month that San Francisco District Attorney General, Attorney George Gascon, declined to file charges against two police officers who killed 21-year-old Amilcar Perez Lopez in the Mission more than 2 years ago. And the city medical examiner found that all six of the bullets that struck him came from the back or the side. And the plainclothes officers said they opened fire to protect themselves. They said he was erratic. And the community was outraged over this. Alberto, what goes through your mind when you hear about the killings of these young Latino youth? And then what happened? What do you think when the police officers who killed this young man, 21-year-old Amilcar Perez Lopez, will not go to jail for this?
Actually, I knew Amilcar Perez Lopez's girlfriend. I knew his girlfriend. And I used to be really cool with her. And yeah, she would always talk to me about like, you know, about him. And she told me that that night when he did die, someone had just stolen his bike, and he was under the influence of alcohol. So I guess he grabs his knife and he goes chases after the guy who stole his bike, and then I don't know how much undercover police officers were there, but they were undercover police officers, and they didn't show their badge or anything. They just shot at him while he was running away.
What are the conversations you have with your friends? What are those conversations like?
It's just crazy how vulnerable you are, like towards death, like when you're like around the police officers or something.
That is Alberto. He is 14 years old. He just finished his freshman year in high school. He lives in the Mission, and he has been in Roadmap to Peace for a year and a half. This organization is dedicated to transforming the health and safety outcomes of the most disconnected and at-risk Latino youth in San Francisco. We're also joined today by Felipe Hernandez. He is Alberto's care manager, and he's been with Roadmap to Peace for 2 years. He does a lot of work with youth in the prison system, and Angela Gallegos Castillo is the community builder and planner for Roadmap to Peace. She has been there since 2015. And if you have any questions or comments about at-risk youth, about what we as a society need to do to ensure that at-risk youth have services like this to prevent the school-to-prison pipeline, we'd love to hear from you. 866-798-8255, 866-798-8255. You can also email feedback@yourcallradio.org. Felipe, how do you talk to the youth you work with at Roadmap to Peace about these killings?
Well, you know, we got to build a relationship with these youth. A lot of these youth are coming, or we're finding they're very traumatized, and so we have to be very careful as how to approach them.
Can you talk more about the trauma?
The trauma could be everything from growing up here in the Mission, seeing generation after generation going through street violence, drug violence. And then with the new youth that we're getting, the recently arrived undocumented youth, it's been very difficult to work with that population because they're coming with addictions or separation of family or wars in their countries. And so that's a different level of understanding, and we really have to be very careful. And that's why we have the network of services that we provide with the RTP program, because we need the community to put and be part of the healing process. And so it's very difficult to say, okay, this is the way that we do it, because we all have to put part in this.
And the youth coming from Honduras and El Salvador, how often does that happen?
And that's happening a lot.
Really?
There is a lot of unaccompanied minors here, and the situation is getting worse, you know, with finding folks on the street, folks that are not connected because they have no family members here. Some folks are just coming and they're straight on the street. So we have youth that have been arrested or somehow they got connected to the system and they're re-diverted to the RTP program for services.
Yeah, and I want to acknowledge and kind of highlight trauma. The kind of trauma Felipe is talking about is the traumatic events that someone may have experienced. But we want to also remind ourselves about the historical trauma, of what historical trauma means for Latinos in the United States. Everything from the Mexicanos and the Mexicans have been here for generations and generations, and over one day the border crossed them. They didn't cross the border. And the systematic institutional racism that exists in this country that have purposefully marginalized and has discriminated against communities of color. And so we don't want to underestimate the importance of understanding how systems have consistently discriminated against people of color. And we need to go and address those policies. Everything, the small policy, I call it the big policies and the small policies. Everything from how budgets are, how budgets of departments and or resources, how much money the community policing gets versus how much money the gang task force gets. I mean, those are all policies. And show me your budget and I'll tell you your priorities of your town.
Right. I mean, we talk about the fact that in California, per pupil spending is around $9,000. Mm-hmm. Per prisoner spending is around $65,000.
Right.
14 facilities. Oh, I'm sorry. It's 33 facilities compared to 13 universities.
And 300 students per one counselor in some high schools in the central part of California. I mean, how is that well-resourced, right? I mean, how do we support young people in getting to college or to just their passions of what they want to do in their lives with that kind of a ratio? It's not good.
And it's important to have the youth understand, like, you know, the direct filing process. We, you know, that had to be changed. We were losing a lot of youth to the prison system. And so advocating and taking them to Sacramento to change these policies.
Alberto, what message would you send to the people who make these decisions on budgets, for example, where the money goes, what services get funded, what services don't get funded?
I don't really have...
Well, when you hear, for example, that per pupil spending is about $9,000 per student, right?
Yeah.
And then per prisoner spending in California is about $65,000?
Yeah, it's... To me, it's... they're just spending a lot of money on criminal justice system. And when there's, like, a lot of, like, you know, like, I don't like to use the word poor, but it's the only word I could think of right now, but, like, a lot of poor people, right, that money could go towards them, like, different kinds of, like, organizations, you know, to help, like, their, what they need to, like, live, like, here in San Francisco.
Ultimately, it's how do we support families? Right? Because our families support young children and youth. And if we don't have family-friendly policies, and we know that the United States is horrific at when compared to other industrialized countries, we don't support our families in this country in ways that really support children. And so when you hear that the administration is about to cut, you know, social programs left and right, we're just going in the opposite direction that we should be going in. And unfortunately, I think we all had this collective trauma, if you will, with the new administration, because 8 years of the Obama administration, while with its challenges, did support many national initiatives that looked at the issue of poverty and supporting, you know, creating programs to support families. My My boys, my brothers and sisters keeper initiative, for example, was addresses black and brown men and boys of color and career to cradle, cradle to career initiatives.
What is the status of those programs now?
That's a good question. I don't know, but I know that it probably doesn't bode well with the new administration.
I mean, you have that, but then you also have these politicians like Donald Trump who adds flames to the fire when you're talking about racism and Islamophobia and saying things about Mexicans, for example. Yeah. Felipe, how does that affect the youth you work with?
You know, when he got elected, some of the schools like International High School, where there's a lot of immigrants that go and study, the school was very traumatized. There was a lot of students that were scared. They didn't want to come to school fearing that they were going to be picked up just on the way to school. And it also closes them up. They don't want to talk to nobody. They don't want to say what's going on. So it makes it difficult for the community to reach out to the youth.
And I talked to the very next week, a vice principal in Alameda County was sharing with me that there was a rise in hate crime and bullying. Within 1 week period, it was already starting, the bullying, the hate crimes,
the fear of some of the kids saying, you know, I was born here, but my mom wasn't, and she might be deported.
A lot of the kids that you all work with were referred to you by community members. So this is a very community member project. What can people listening who want to get involved do? What is most effective?
So we get referrals through the community, but we also get referrals through the nonprofits that are in the service network and through the schools that we have connections with.
We also get referrals from probation department, from the county jail, from their POs. So we get a number of other organizations referring to us.
If they'd like a phone number, they can call 415-710-1964.
All right, and we'll put that on the website. Is that the right number?
Oh, no, hold on a second. That was our last director. No, call 415-872-7412. 415-872-7412. That's the phone number to our service connector for the service.
Great. We'll put that on our website. Angela Gallegos Castillo is community builder and planner for Roadmap to Peace. Alberto has been with Roadmap to Peace for a year and a half. 14. He's just 14. Is this your first time on the air?
Second time.
All right. Yeah. Well, thank you so much for coming in. And Felipe Hernandez is Alberto's care manager, and he's been with Roadmap to Peace for 2 years. Roadmap to Peace is one of the winners of this year's Community Board San Francisco Peacemaker Awards. Thank you all for coming in.
Thank you very much.
Thank you. And coming up tomorrow, we will have a discussion with another winner of the Peacemaker Award recipients. We'll be speaking with Phoebe Vanderhorst, founder of WayPass, Women's Aftercare Program and Supportive Services. After incarceration and recovering from drug and alcohol addiction, Phoebe Vanderhorst created WayPass for other formerly incarcerated students at City College of San Francisco. So I hope you can join us for that important conversation. Your Call is produced here at KALW. Thanks to Ali Bundner for producing today's show. You can find more and listen to past shows at yourcallradio.org. I'm Rose Aguilar. It's Your Call. Thanks for joining us.